Garrett Edelstein here, your celeb expert and your celeb savant. Celeb Savant is a weekly entertainment show. We have long-form career retrospective type interviews with celebrities, singers, actors, and industry experts. On this episode of Celeb Savant, I'll be speaking to Chris Norman. He's an English soft rock singer and was the original lead singer of the English soft rock band Smokey. He left the band in 1986 and he continues to have solo successes throughout the decades. On this episode of Celeb Savant, Chris Norman. Thank you, Chris, for joining me on my podcast. So, Chris, where do we find you in the world? What's happening in your life and how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you. I'm fine. I'm at home and I'm just in between doing some gigs and promotion and different things, you know. And in about 10 days, I've got to leave and go and do another show. Then I'm doing a TV show. So I'm just in the middle of all that, really.
Lovely. And where is home? What part of the world?
Isle of Man.
Isle of Man. Oh, that's interesting. And let's start, take a way back all to the very beginning, to the beginning of your journey in the music industry. What got you invigorated or in the creative process of starting music? And I know it's a long journey of many years, but let's look at the hybrid version of Chris Norman's story.
Yeah. What started me off? Well, I met Alan Silson, who was the lead guitar player in Smokey, when I was at school. And I met Terry there too, who was the bass player. And me and Alan Silson got a guitar each for Christmas by coincidence. So we got talking about that and we ended up going around to each other's houses and just practicing and teaching each other this chords for this, and you know, and that's how the band started, really. We started to do that and then we started to play the odd gig now and again, little things like school dance halls or youth clubs or those kind of things, you know. And then Terry joined a little bit later on. We had a drummer called Ron Kelly, and then later on he left, and we got the final lineup. Then was Pete Spencer on drums, and then we were just gigging all over the country, all over the UK, and made a couple of records, did some radio broadcasts, a couple of TV shows, and eventually, after a very long time, after about 7 years, we had our first hit when we signed to Rack Records. Yeah, that's a little quick synopsis of the start to that.
I know that you've released a number of albums, solo albums. Tell us a little bit more about your current album. I've read that it's covers of a bunch of songs that you loved. Tell us about the album and what was the thing that allowed you to choose those specific songs?
Well, it was just an idea that somebody had to do, you know, like a cover of love songs. Yeah. So I thought, well, it could be fun because I'd been doing I did a studio album. The most recently was in 2019, which came out end of 2020. And I didn't really have anything to do with the studio album. I didn't have enough songs for that. And so I thought, well, be quite good to do that. So then I took a long time trying to find songs because there's so many love songs out there by other people. And so that I asked a few people, what's your favorite love song? Well, I got lists and lists and lists.
Yes.
And then I went through them all. And basically, I also made my own list, of course. And then I started to find out the ones that I could sing best. And so I got it down to like 15 or so songs, and then ended up recording 12 of them. And I just picked the ones that I liked over the years that were not too schmaltzy, you know. Yeah. I didn't want them to be too, you know, a couple of people suggested a couple of Lionel Richie tunes and stuff, which are okay for him, but weren't right for me. So I picked the ones that, you know, that I liked a lot and that I felt like I could sing. And then I started in my own studio and started recording them and getting them to sound, you know, up to a certain point. And I played most of the instruments myself. The only person I had on at the beginning was Jeff Carline, who's my guitar player for my touring band. And then I did some drums in Nashville and some keyboards in Nashville, and got a guy called Jake Burns to mix it, who's a great studio engineer, mixed it and mastered it. And that was the end of that, and it was finished. And so now we've got this album called Rediscovered Love Songs. I call it Rediscovered because, you know, people were saying, well, we just want to call it the Love Songs album. Mm. But you know, it's a bit, you know, it sounds a bit cheesy. So I thought, well, what are they? They're just sort of songs that I've rediscovered from the past. So we call it Rediscovered, and then in brackets, or not in brackets, Love Song, Rediscovered. Yep. Love Song, which is kind of what it is, you know.
And you mentioned you had your album in 2019 and you've been releasing up until that point. So what continues to you to inspire music and create? What is that element for you that's, okay, let's do another album, let's create? Is it different each time, or what is that journey of creating from zero to a full album?
Well, the difference of each time is usually who I'm doing it with, whether I'm doing it on my own, whether I'm looking for a studio album or some kind of a thing like this, mm-hmm. which is a compilation of somebody else's songs. So it always, and the reason I want to do it is because that's what I do, you know, for the last 50 years or something. Yeah. I've been playing gigs and then later on recording. And so that's what I do. That's my life, you know. I do gigs and I record. That's what I do.
Okay.
I write songs. I mean, I'm already writing songs now. I was in the studio yesterday with new songs that I'm writing for way in the future. I'm not planning on making any more albums yet, but maybe in a year or two.
Yeah.
You know, so I start writing almost as soon as I finish the last thing. There's usually a gap where I can do it when I'm gigging or something. And then if I start writing and I've got little ideas, I think I'll start to record some of those. And that's where I am now. So it's a pleasure for me to be making new music. I wouldn't like to be one of these artists who just goes out and plays old songs, you know, mm-hmm. constantly every week, because I find that boring. I mean, I do the old songs. I do a lot of smoky songs in my set and some songs from my stuff. But I need new songs to keep it fresh, you know, to keep it fresh for me so that I don't get bored with it.
Yeah.
So now when I do a gigs, the songs are like a mixture between old stuff, and then I do like two or three old ones and then a couple of new ones and two or three old ones, and I go backwards and forwards.
Yeah.
And that keeps it nice and fresh for me, because the band, you know, they like to play new stuff too. It's exciting for them to do something else.
And for the listening audience to hear new stuff. I know a lot of times the listening audience, oh, we just want this song with this song. But it's inviting to allow the audience to hear, okay, cool, here's the old stuff. But listen, this is something fresh and new as well for you to listen and to add to your playlist.
Yeah, exactly. So it's and it keeps me current, you know.
Yeah.
Instead of just doing, oh, I'm going to go see Chris Norman and he's like going to be playing those old songs that we've heard before. If there's something new and there's a new album out, there'll be people coming who want to hear those songs, you know. So there's always people in the audience who only want to hear the new songs, but there's a great amount of people who want to hear the old ones too, so I mix them up.
So I'm going to go back to the performances and live shows in a moment. You mentioned that you've already started writing. Now, when you write songs and write, what sparks an idea? Is it personal journey, observations of the world around you, combination of both? What is that spark of from nothing to a full 3-minute song?
Well, it's got to start for me with music. So I don't necessarily think I'm going to write a song about the situation that's happening in another part of the world or something that you've heard. Although that happens maybe sometimes later once I come to write the lyrics. But the beginning of it for me is sitting down with a guitar or a piano and just sort of toodling about, you know, on a guitar, just sort of trying to just play it. And now and again, when you do that, suddenly you get an idea and you think, oh, what's that? That's kind of nice. You know, and that sparks off a song. And when I do that, it's usually a melody and maybe a few lines that have just sort of come along with the melody, you know.
Yep.
So I end up with a thing. And I just wrote a song now called 16 Miles From Home. And I had this 16 miles from home. It was like this. And I thought, what the hell's that about? 16 miles from home? What's that going to be about? So then I have to sit down and think, right, I've got to write this, the lyrics. I've got the tune. I've got the verse. I've got the chorus. I like that. I might have a couple of words like that. And then I think, well, this is what I'm singing. It's not a bad title for a song, but what is it? What's it about? You know? So then you have to think, well, could it be somebody who's trying to get home from mm-hmm. somewhere, or what's he doing, you know? So I have to get into it and then think about what the story is that makes him 16 miles from home, and then write the lyrics from that. So that's how I do it, really.
And is it a sole creative process, or do you collaborate with other people when you create music?
Mostly I write alone now these days. I used to write, when I was in Smokey, I used to write a lot with Pete Spencer.
Okay.
But we wrote a lot of stuff together. But when that finished, we continued writing together for a while, but Pete was kind of not doing the same thing as I was anymore. We didn't live near each other anymore. So that kind of dwindled away, although I have written with him since then, but only occasionally. Or I've written the odd song with my guitar player, Jeff Carline. If he sends me an idea that he's got, and I think, oh, I like that. So I did a song on the last album called Good Enough for Rock and Roll. And he had that basic riff. It was a guitar riff type song. And he had that and sent me it. And so I got hold of that then and finished it off and wrote some lyrics. And I wrote a hook line in the middle. So sometimes I do write with other people, but most times, these days, it's just on my own.
Going back to the concerts now, I'm very much a person who loves going to concerts. I'm the person loving standing right in front, having absolutely...
That was you, was it?
Yeah, it was me every time. So in South Africa, there's a word called jol. I love, we go for a jol. So J-O-L for those overseas listeners. So we go right in front and I've got my cell phone in my pocket. I'm just there enjoying myself, dancing, having so much fun. And I look at the people around me and it's so frustrating because every person's got their cell phone out trying to get those perfect images, perfect shots, perfect videos. And like, put your phones down, be in the moment. The person's right there. Just let that be what it is. From your perspective, seeing just a sea of cell phones, what is that space for you on the receiving end of that?
Well, you're right about that. I think that sometimes when I look out at the audience and there's, whenever I do a gig anywhere, there's always like a couple of hundred sort of fans that come to every gig nearly. Mm. They're usually the first people I can see at the front. And most of them, or very many of them, are filming me all the time, you know? And I'm thinking, you're kind of missing it, really. You're watching, you're looking at your phone to film it and you're missing the show, which is right there in front of you.
Yeah.
So I agree about that. When I go to a concert, I never do that at all. You know, I just want to see the band and get into it, or the artist, whoever it is. So, yeah, I don't know. That's a modern day thing, isn't it? I mean, people want to. And the other thing is when they're waiting for you outside the hotel or outside the gig to and you just a few autographs, they always want a picture. You know, can I have a picture? Give them a picture. So I see these same people all the time and do a picture with. Oh, yeah, OK. And I sometimes say, how many pictures have you got now? That looks exactly like this, you know, with you and me with my arm around you, smiling into a camera, doing a selfie. You must have 1,000 of them by now. They all look exactly the same if you lined them up. But for them, it's kind of like I guess it's like a diary.
Yeah.
Whether this was this town, this was this town. Mm. And like I say, it's a modern day thing. People want to film and take photographs with their phone. You can now. You never used to be able to do that. Yep. We're doing this now with the same thing. This is all like a new thing over the last few years that we never would have thought of. You know, when I used to go to concerts when I was young, you didn't have the opportunity to do that. You didn't have like a phone in your pocket that would take good photographs or film or, you know. So I guess people can do it, so they do.
And you speak about technology in that. So when you first started creating music, we had, and I'm so grateful and so excited that these are coming back, but we had vinyls and cassettes, CDs. I love me a CD. I always buy my CDs. But now we have these digital platforms. Like I said, I'm not sure if you're aware, but last year they announced that, or the sales were that, and the first time in 21 years, CDs had grown in sales. So I was very excited about that because for me, I love holding the thing, the pages, the aesthetic, seeing the pictures, seeing the music lyrics. What is your perception of the digital platforms and the way now listeners are consuming music?
Well, it's just like one of the things, again, like we were talking about, really. Yeah. It's just a thing that's inevitable these days. You can't record companies now want to go onto that digital platform. They want to get onto Spotify and YouTube and use all those kind of social media to promote the records, but also to have downloads for them, so that I don't know why. I guess it's because it costs more to produce a CD, to produce the packaging for a CD, the artwork, the actual pressing of the CD and the case and everything. You have to do all that. And this way you don't. You just put it online and people can just click on it and get it. But I'm with you. I mean, if I buy an album, I want to see who played what. I want to see the lyrics, maybe. I want to see, you know, I want to have a piece of, well, plastic, I don't know what it is, but that. Yeah. And I still like vinyl records, you know, they're beginning to make a little bit of a comeback, but it's only a minority now of the sales of vinyl. I prefer that physical product that comes out, but, you know, no matter what I say or argue about with the management and the Seek record company, I'm saying, why are you going to put it on there, you know? I mean, the last album, they put the whole album on YouTube. track after track, the whole album. And I said, what's that for? I mean, if you do that, why would anybody buy the bloody record?
Yeah.
They've already got it. They've only got to do is go on YouTube. They can hear the whole album over and over and over and over again. Why do they need to buy the album? You just, surely you're canceling out sales here.
Yeah.
But that's what they do, these sort of things now. I don't get it, really, but they do it. And so you've got to kind of, I now am thinking, okay, you do what you think you should do, but let's not give away the whole album. And also, let's make sure we do enough promotion and the old-fashioned way, the TV shows and the radio things and everything else, so that people who weren't looking for it can also be aware of it, you know? Yeah. Because otherwise, I mean, you know, they say, well, it's on Spotify. Yeah, but you have to go and put my name in and put the album in. If you don't know about it, how are you going to put it in, you know? So you have to do both. It's a balance. And it does definitely mean that there's no, you don't sell the amount of records or CDs that you used to, unless you maybe Adele or something. you know, I liked it better before.
Yeah.
And I don't use it myself very often. If I hear a song or an album, I go and buy it.
You know, it's interesting because I have my Spotify account and I have the premium for the simple fact is that, so I teach spinning classes and I create playlists for those spinning classes. But I've created the playlist like 2-3 years ago. And when I go back into the playlist, now all of a sudden a song has been removed off the playlist. Whereas if I've got the CD, it's always mine. It's always there. No one can take it off my account. It's in my on my CD rack over there. So yeah, I suppose it's a balancing act these days, but it's just also making sure that you guys get paid what you're supposed to. Because I've heard that, you know, these platforms don't pay great amounts or properly. No. So
the idea of making used to be when I first started out, you know, with starting having hit records and albums and stuff, you used to make the money was coming from the record thing, and you did the tours to promote the record, and then you'd make the money from the sales. It's the other way around now, really. It's almost like the CD is promoting the tour. So then you make money on tour. You don't expect to make that much from the record like you used to, because, you know, for instance, on Spotify, I don't know what the percentage is, but, you know, people pay a subscription to Spotify for everybody. So if they watch, if they download your album, it's a minute amount of money that you get for that, you know, because it spreads through everybody. So, yeah, there's not a lot of money in those kind of things anymore. You make money on tour now.
And what is your perception of social media?
Well, I'm not really that big a social media person. I mean, I've got all the things you're supposed to have. I've got a Facebook account and a TikTok account and whatever it is, all those things. I've got all that, but I didn't set them up. My management set them up because you have to have them. People want a platform that they can contact you on or write comments on and everything. So I get that. I do check Facebook every so often, maybe a couple of 3 times a week, just to see what anybody's putting on about, especially if I've got something new coming out, see if anybody's made any comments about it or see what anything else is all about. But I never actually send messages, hardly ever. If it's something important, I want to make an announcement, you know, like if somebody's scamming something and I want to say, don't take any notice of this particular thing because it's not me, it's a scam, then I'll do a thing. But I don't use Facebook like most people do, where they keep writing messages to each other. Yeah. I don't do it. I'm not interested in doing that, you know. So I'm not a big participant in social media.
Now, how did you get involved in the Licorice Pizza soundtrack, the song with Susie Quattro? By the way, I interviewed Susie a couple of months ago for our show, so there's some commonality there. So how did that happen? Are you still in contact with her? Are there any other artists you'd want to collaborate with that you haven't? A whole bunch of questions in one.
The Licorice Pizza thing, I have no idea that it was on there.
Okay.
Until I got... somebody asked me the question, what do you think about the stumbling in being on? And I said, on what? They said, on Licorice Pizza. I said, what is that? So it's a movie. I said, I had no idea. So, you know, these things are done behind scenes. I don't know, some publisher or whatever must have done a sync with that movie, and suddenly it's on. And I think it was about a month later before I even knew it was on there. But so it's not really something that me or Susie have got any sort of thing to do with, really. Yeah. It just happened. You go, oh, that's nice. There was a Netflix series, I think, about that serial killer, Dahmer.
Oh, Dahmer, yes.
Yeah. And my daughter called me the other day and she said, I was watching Dahmer. Have you seen that? I said, no. She said, about this series, yeah, I've seen it advertised. I said, no, I don't fancy it really. She says, oh, I was watching it. And in the third episode, he's driving along in his car and the radio's on in his car. And it's Casey Kasem, you know, from America,
yes,
who used
yeah,
to do the chart show. And he says, and he goes, America's top 40. And then it is, and at number four this week, it's Chris Norman and Susie Quattro were stumbling in and the record comes out. I'm thinking, oh, wow, this is cool, you know.
Yeah.
And they played about a minute and a half of it too. You know, usually you get like a line and then they go into dialogue.
Yeah.
This was like for a minute and a half, first of all, on its own. And then there was a bit of dialogue you could hear in the background. Then it came back to it. So I thought, that's cool, you know. I love stuff like that. I mean, really, it's so cool when you put something on and you go, oh. Didn't know, you know.
Yeah, you've collaborated with Susie. Are there any other artists that you want to collaborate with?
Well, I, you know, I've done a few collaborations over the years. The last one was, well, actually, I was just going to do one with Bonnie Tyler. I wrote a song called Battle of the Sexes, and we were going to do a duet together. We talked about, because I've seen Bonnie quite a few times over the years. You know, I'm doing a show with her actually coming up, I think, in November. And every now and again, I know her pretty well for over the years. And her husband. And we talked about doing a duet together. So I thought that would be cool. Me and Bonnie, your kind of voices are similar, you know. So I sent her about three or four songs. And one of them was this Battle of the Sexes, which she picked up on. And so she got in contact with me. She said, I'd love to do Battle of the Sexes. I think that's a great song. I said, okay, let's do it. But she said, what do you think if I do it with Rod Stewart? I said, what? What? She says, but can you imagine how if it takes off, how many records it'd sell in America? And so first of all, I thought, not sure about that, you know. And then I talked to a couple of people and they said, well, Rod Stewart and Bonnie Tyler might be massive, you know. So I said, okay, go and do it. So that was supposed to be a duet with me and Bonnie. And turned out being a duet with her and Rod, and it was on her last album. But yeah, it's cool. You know, I don't care. It's good. It's just I wrote the song, so that's money. Cool.
Money. Money, 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 money. <Like that. laughs> So now tell me a little bit about your experience of South Africa.
I've never been.
Never?
Never. Smokey, in the time when I was in them, we were asked to go and do a couple of shows like Sun City and things like that. And at that time, it was like considered not very cool to do that because of apartheid and everything. So we never went. Later on, when I'd left Smokey, I left Smokey in 86.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until after that. I don't know when they first went out there, but maybe in the 80s or 90s. So they've been a few times. And they actually do quite well there, I think. Although there's nobody in Smokey now that was in the original band. But nevertheless, they've done it. But I've never been. And when I saw that the fact that they were successful there, I said to my manager, you know, I'd like to go there, you know, see if we can get. But I think because they don't have the Smokey name, you know. So far it hasn't happened. But, you know, if you know anybody who wants to do a tour with me, I'd be happy to come. I'd love to.
Putting it out there that you'll come to South Africa. I'll be there right up in front without my cell phone, cheering you on. And then we'll go for drinks afterwards. How does that sound?
Good idea. Good idea. Sounds good to me. You arrange it. I'll be there.
Okay, perfect. Let's try and see what we can do. Chris, the podcast is listened to South Africa. Main audience is in the UK and USA, actually. So USA, UK, USA, Belgium and Germany, all around the world. As a final message to the listening audience, what would you like to say?
Well, the first thing that I would probably think I should say is thank you very much, because, you know, I started this job, if you like, career when I was 17. I turned professional and went into this thing, and it was like an open book in front of me. I didn't know what was going to happen. And since then, I've been in the business ever since, and I've been lucky enough. It comes in spurts, but nevertheless, I've been lucky enough to sell a lot of records. And then I had a solo career, which I'd sold some more records. And I've been touring ever since, pretty much off and on. And without people actually enjoying what I'm doing and buying the records, none of that would have been possible. So I guess I should say thank you very much to everybody who bought a record ever that I was involved with.
Chris, this is Celebs Rant signing out with Mr. Chris Norman. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you. Been a pleasure.